5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Partially Derivative. My name is Noah Guzik, and I am your host, joined by co-host Alex Sugar. This is the long-awaited return and sequel of our last episode, Cryptocurrency and Blockchain Technology Part 1.5. We wanted to do another possibly shorter episode on crypto because there's just so much to talk about. For this episode, we'll discuss topics like dApps and DeFi, hardware wallets and exchanges, specific projects like Cardano and Chainlink, the markets and volatility, and the decline of mining in China. Without further ado, I'll let Alec introduce himself.
Sure, yeah, so there's been a lot of stuff going on lately with cryptocurrency. The markets have been kind of down, I guess you could say, mostly because of Bitcoin. But there has still been a lot of interesting stuff that I think we could talk about today. Kind of giving it that 1.5 tag just because it's not, I don't think it's as crazy as it was when we did our last episode, considering I feel like that was like months ago now. So I know we've got some bullet points we want to talk about. So if you want to get into those, we could start there.
Yeah, well, for our first topic, we'll start with DeFi applications and dApps in general. So just a quick description of dApps. The biggest platform for dApps is Ethereum, the Ethereum blockchain. So Ethereum is not just a coin like Bitcoin. It's also a platform for other people to build their applications on and you use it as a platform. It's not just, you know, like Bitcoin where it's just a coin. It doesn't actually do anything. So in terms of Ethereum, the native token for using and building a dApp on the Ethereum blockchain is called Ether, and that's the coin that is second in market cap to Bitcoin right now. And like Alec mentioned, Bitcoin has definitely been driving the markets. So since Bitcoin took about a 50% dive since earlier this year, Ethereum has also plummeted with it. But unlike Bitcoin,
50% still is not that much, though. Just
considering the big picture of the way these have been going, yes.
Yeah.
So if we just go to Ethereum's website, we can see there's multiple categories of decentralized applications. There's finance, which is DeFi. That's probably the most popular type of dApp right now. And then, of course, we have arts and collectibles, which would be typically NFTs. And then we have the gaming category, we have technology. So I'll just go through a couple of these. You might have heard of some of these. A lot of DeFi apps are applications that allow you to lend out your crypto. So you buy crypto and then you give it to one of these applications, and then they use your crypto and you earn the interest on them. So a couple of them listed on Ethereum's website are Aave, Compound, and Oasis. And then there's these token swaps, the most popular one being Uniswap. And then there's also Matcha and 1inch.
I have seen a lot of those are pretty popular. I think they all just get used interchangeably. I think for what is it? It's like you can trade them back and forth for what is it called? Arbitrage, I think. So people use them for like making money quickly.
Yeah. It's interesting, but like everything to do with crypto, there's a lot of substantially more risk involved compared to traditional markets. So yeah, those are the token swaps. And then going down, we have trading and prediction markets, which, according to some of these descriptions, it's basically betting. There's poly market, which is where you bet on outcomes and you trade on information markets. And then there's auger, where you bet on outcomes of sports, economics, and more world events. So basically, because traditional betting, like sports gambling, is illegal in a lot of states, I guess this is one way to get around that, is to use
which crypto that's gambling. Me, which is the nice thing about, I know we talk about like Bitcoin and Ethereum and whatnot, but like the nice thing is that people were raving about Bitcoin a few years ago just because it's a decentralized way to exchange money. But like, I think Ethereum takes the next step. Like when you're talking about how you were saying, like, oh, gambling is illegal in most places, but because Ethereum is decentralized, like you can't really, there's nobody to ban it on the Ethereum network. So anything right. that you can think of that like that you want to do, if you have the know-how or the team to build it, like there are a lot of crazy things you can do.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a great way to, decentralization is definitely a great way to get around oppressive governments. Wink, wink.
I think I've said this on a podcast in the past, though. I think China is trying to utilize like Ethereum. I mean, I could be wrong, but I thought I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, we can actually do some, maybe we'll do some research into that and give an update in a later episode. But there's also investment applications. And under this category, we have the application that I found that I find the most interesting, which is called Pool Together. So basically, from what I understand, Pool Together is where you get, you purchase stable coins, which stable coins are, you know, they're tethered to roughly the value of the US dollar. So they can be backed by the actual like fiat currency of the US dollar, such as like coins like USDC is. And then there's other coins that are backed by gold that, you know, they, each coin is still, it is backed by the amount of gold that equals the US dollar. And the goal of stable coins is to just keep it at the value of the US dollar. So it only fluctuates, you know, by very small numbers. But anyway, Pool Together, you actually, you get a stable coin, and then everybody who uses the application takes all their stable coin and they put them in these pools, and they lend out the money, the pool money, for a week. And then depending on how much money, how many stable coin you put into the pool, you get so many tickets. And then at the end of the week, you earn interest. So say, you know, 50,000 people put in one stable coin. Well, there's $50,000 that's being lended out for the week. And that money is earning interest. So instead of splitting the interest amongst all the people who put the money in the pool, it's sort of a lottery system. At the end of the week, all the interest that is earned from the pool is given as a prize, and it's randomly chosen. But the more coins you put in, the higher chance you get to win the prize. So
I think personally, like, that's a pretty valuable like if you were going to try to diversify your portfolio into different things, I think it would definitely be worth it to have a little bit of money in something like that. Like, you know, have most of it in things that are earning you passive income, but why not? You know, you don't got to buy a lottery ticket every single week.
So the only problems I've run into when I've tried to use it is the fees to use to put like $20 into it, because that's what I was looking at doing, the fees to do that are like $30. So you're paying more in fees than you are actually putting into the pool. And I don't really know why.
Is it now, did you say it was built on Ethereum or no?
Yes, it is.
So if it's built on Ethereum, the problem could be that Ethereum fees are just high. And that's why.
But the things that I've looked at, I don't think the fees on Ethereum, I think it's something to do with pools token.
Is it having you buy Ethereum first or just straight to that token?
No, you buy the stablecoin and then you just put the coin in the pool.
That's so kind of weird. That's usually
you hook up the wallet. And
that's
then
interesting.
You just I've not found, I've looked up, you know, like the price of the Ethereum fee has never been $30, I don't think. It's never been that high.
It's been pretty recently.
It hasn't been that high recently. But anyway.
Recently, no, yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So that's why I'm a little confused on that. So maybe I'll have to look into it a little bit more. But I mean, I haven't found anything else on it. And then, so that's pooled together. I think it's an interesting concept. But like you said, you don't put. And the other thing is, any money you put in there, and if you don't win, you don't lose any money.
Well, yeah, because it's just generating interest off of the fees, right? Or off of the...
Yeah, so it automatically puts in, like, if you put in $20 and then you win the pool, you can put the pool prize back into another pool for the next week.
Okay.
So you can't. They
no
market
risk.
It as right. That's what they market it as. The description of it is a lottery you can't lose. So
you can lose if they
right.
if somehow
if the application fails.
Yeah, literally the application would have to fail. But...
So they're marketing it as very low risk, but yeah, like it, you wouldn't want to put. I wouldn't recommend putting all your money.
So I know that we're not at this topic yet, but like talking about exchanges and hardware wallets and things like that, like all these things say there's no risk or little to no risk, but really, unless you have a hardware wallet where like you have the keys to your coins, you really do have a certain level of risk. Like anything that you're getting like an APY or whatever from, like a yield from, you do have a certain level of risk, like just holding it somewhere where you are getting yield, unless it's native staking. So like a hardware wallet, like you were asking me earlier, like is it worth it? Like if you want to be 100% sure that your money is secure, then you should get a hardware wallet. But like if you want to get yield on your coins, which I think a lot of people do, then you sometimes can't do that with a hardware wallet.
Right. I would definitely, like you said, we were talking earlier in the week, hardware wallets are really only useful if you have, I think you said like $10,000, but it would have to be a substantial amount.
The number like isn't like, it's not like a specific number, but yeah, like I was trying to say, like, if you had $500 and you were going to buy a wallet for $50, like that's not, to me, it's like, I'd rather just shove that money in my pocket or something. Like I don't need something that's worth 10% of the money I have, you know? So like
right.
that level of risk I'm willing to have if it's like, get a hardware wallet. Now, if crypto like goes into another bull market and we're looking at like 20-30 grand, like you better believe I'm shoving that in a hardware wallet. But like right now, it's just not, I don't think it would make any sense.
So what do you remember the highest? So earlier this year went up to about 60,000. That was about
somewhere in there, yeah.
Ethereum at the same time. I'm pulling this up right now.
I always the price always climbs and then goes back down, so I never know where the top is at. But
Ethereum, when Bitcoin was at about 60K, Ethereum was out at about 4,000.
Which is just fantastic.
But then since then, it's come back down and it's, you know,
but that's, so we were talking about, like, we were talking about Benjamin, was Cohen, is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
Like, the main reason I like watching his videos is, like, when you watch his videos, you feel more confident in, I guess, the buying opportunities that there are now. Like, you will get Bitcoin, like, down maybe over 50% from its all-time high. And it makes you think, like, oh, man, like, if this is it, then, you know, I could be throwing my money in the fire. Like, but when you watch his videos, it's like, this has all happened in the past, and it's all very cyclical. And it has to do with, like, periods of, like, overselling and overbuying and just the market heating up and cooling down. So, like, while I don't love Bitcoin, I think it's a good, like, indicator for the rest of the coins in the market you might be interested in.
Right. Yeah.
And so, like, when you look at Chainlink was, I think, close to $50 or above. I don't know where it was, but, like, last time I looked at the price, it was at, like, $18. And you figure, man, if I just throw some money in there, you know, even if I throw in, like, $100, right, and I get, like, I think it's, like, you could get, what, like, 4 or 5 coins? Like,
yeah.
If that goes back up to $50, like, you can wait a year or however long it takes, but you'll be like, oh, dang, that's a nice little payout. So
that's the good thing about just markets in general is you can tailor your portfolio to the amount of risk you want to take. So if you have a lot of risk tolerance, then you can put more into Bitcoin. If you don't, then you wouldn't do that, hopefully.
Well, and that's the I don't know if we've talked about this on a podcast or just at all yet, but one of the videos I was watching was talking about diversifying your portfolio. And they were talking about how when somebody buys stocks and bonds and real estate and every other thing under the sun to diversify, like, sometimes that doesn't make sense because all of those things you're buying are backed by the US dollar. So while you are diversifying, sort of, like, you're kind of relying on the fact that the US dollar will hold its value, which I don't think it's going to.
No,
so
certainly not.
Cryptocurrency is great because it's an asset that isn't correlated most of the time to, like, fiat value, like, you know, the US dollar. So
it is definitely seen as a hedge against inflation.
Like, just like gold. Like, oh, they say gold has like a negative correlation against inflation or whatever. So holding gold is good. Like, to me, that's what cryptocurrency is. And there's a lot of, like, intra-cycle volatility that scares people away. But if you look at, like, if you just zoom the chart out and look at it, you're like, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, if you look at it over the long term, it's less scary.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, okay, it was going up here. All right. And then it went down, but it tested all these resistance levels and kind of consolidated. And then it made this move up and consolidated again after going down. And it keeps putting in, what is it, like, higher lows? So, yeah, it's like the macro scale trends are what I feel like a lot of people don't look at because they get too caught up in the daily chart.
So that was a little bit of a tangent off the topic, but
yeah, just a little bit.
I'm just gonna go through the rest of these applications because these are actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
There's payments. So there's Tornado Cash, which the description is send anonymous transactions on Ethereum. And then there's Zablier, which is streaming money in real time. I have no clue what that is. Crowdfunding. So it's crowdfunding for Ethereum community projects with amplified contributions. That's actually I think that would be a very good idea. Like,
yeah, like there's a lot of
if you want to build an application on Ethereum, you can crowdfund like with an application.
I think that's like that's what we were talking about earlier too. Like, I think there are a lot of these ideas that people are having or implementing, and a lot of them might fall by the wayside. But I think there will be like some really revolutionary stuff that will come out of like this period of just like seeing what works and what doesn't. And I think that a lot of that is being done on Ethereum. So betting on Ethereum is not a bad idea, in my opinion. And betting on, if you really believe in a project that will supplement Ethereum's usefulness going forward, like, that's what I see Chainlink as. Mostly because, like, there was this, I think it was Lex Fridman. He has, like, a podcast.
Yeah.
And he had Vitalik Buterin on. And Vitalik, when asked about Chainlink, was basically, like, he said something along the lines of, like, if the United States went to a civil war and we had to display the price of Ethereum against the US dollar, like, would we put the North or the South? And he's like Ethereum doesn't want to do that. Like, Ethereum doesn't want to make those decisions. It's like, so Ethereum is like blind to real world, like real world data and shit like that. So basically, like, Chainlink is that media or that, medium is the medium to bring in that data to make Ethereum even smarter. And so, because Ethereum is just, it executes contracts just based off of its, what is it, like, predefined terms or whatever. And so, yeah, betting on projects that will be useful alongside Ethereum, I think, is a good idea as well. So yeah, just like decentralized applications, you know, like,
if there's one that's interesting. Like applications that make Ethereum better.
Exactly. Yeah. Ones that, like, so when you look at like Cardano or other things like that, a lot of them are almost in, I don't know what the word would be, like, in a, they want to do what Ethereum does, kind of try to do it better, right? But so those are, I think, good to invest in as a hedge against Ethereum. But I also think it would be good to invest in things that you're like Chainlink, for instance, is blockchain agnostic. So it doesn't matter if it's Ethereum or Cardano or whatever ends up, you know, pulling ahead in the arms race. It's like Chainlink can work with everything. And it has a utility that I think is valuable to every blockchain.
Yeah, I find that aspect really cool. So that's just like a brief overview of all the decentralized applications that Ethereum's website kind of advertises. So we'll move into the next topic, which we wrote down as hardware wallets and exchanges. So before we get into like hardware wallets, let's just talk about like a wallet, like a software wallet.
Sure.
So the question I have actually is, there's a bunch of different wallets, right?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of different software wallets. Like I'm on Ethereum's website. There's the Ledger wallet. There's Coinbase wallet. Which ones do I have installed? I have MetaMask. I have Ronin wallet. Okay. So I don't know. Do you know, like, what is the difference between all of these? Obviously, there's some where, like, some support more coins than others, some support more features than others, but those are, like, MetaMask is very popular. I know that Coinbase wallet is popular. Which wallet do you use?
So I use MetaMask as well, just because it has support for a lot of the ERC-20 tokens. And I use, see, I don't use Ledger. If I bought a wallet, that's what I was considering buying. But to my understanding, like, with all these wallets, like, you don't, like, the coins that you own aren't, like, in your wallet. Like, you have a public key and a private key, I believe, and your coins are stored on the blockchain. And then in order to access them, you need your private key.
Okay.
So I don't necessarily understand why or how, like, say you own a Ledger Nano X. Like, I don't understand how that would be different from just using, like, a like writing down your own keys. I don't get exactly how it works. I do know, I think that Ledger is a hardware wallet you can use, but then you can also, it's like integrated with their application, so you can actually buy coins and send it to your wallet, I believe. But I'm not very knowledgeable exactly about how all of it works.
Yeah, so I just have a lot of different wallets, because I mean, another D app that I just found that I mentioned before we started recording was Axie Infinity, which is kind of like Pokemon with NFTs. So every creature is an NFT, but in order to use it, you need a Ronin wallet, and then in order to get coins into Ronin wallet, you need MetaMask. So I now have accounts for those. And then going into like hardware wallets, we talked about Ledger is currently the most popular hardware wallet, and it's what it sounds like. It's just a digital hardware wallet. It looks like a keychain kind of. And they sell two different sizes. There's the Nano X and the Nano S. And the difference is like the size. And they're actually not that expensive, all things considered.
That's, yeah, like we talk about, I'm like, oh, don't buy a wallet unless you have a certain amount of money. Like, of course you can buy a wallet. You could have $500 and buy a wallet. But like, I don't know, at a certain point, like, if you look at Chainlink right now at like $18 or whatever it's at. Say that wallet's $100. So you could buy like 5 Chainlink for that. Okay, so then you wait 3 months or 6 months, and say Chainlink theoretically did get back to $50. Okay, so what is that, like $250 that you'd have for $100? But then you look at the wallet you just bought, and maybe it's not depreciating in value, but like that wallet is still only worth whatever you bought it for, like $100. And but now you have $250 from your investment in Chainlink. So to me, that's like, that's the opportunity cost of, let me put my money into this wallet. Or like, I'll even do that with like, I'm at the grocery store or something, or I'm out and I'm like, huh, I'm like, these almonds are $8. I'm like, okay, well I could buy like half a Chainlink, right? Like, and then I'm like, and then I'm like, if that Chainlink is worth $50 in 6 months, then I could have doubled that money, but I bought almonds instead, right? But
so you can't do that with everything, or else you'll never buy food.
Everything, but that will. Well, a better example, like if I go out to Best Buy and I'm like, ooh, I want to buy this new controller or headset, even though I don't need it. You know what I mean? Like, so then I'll consider things against like the opportunity cost of an investment. And I'm like, if I did want to buy this thing, you know, if I invested it, then I could get for free, quote unquote, in a few months. I don't know. Like, that's how I look at the hardware wallet. It's like, right now, while the prices are so low, I don't think it makes sense to put your, like, buy a hardware wallet. I'm like, dude, you need to dump as much money as you can into at least Ethereum. Right, and if you want to get riskier, put it into other stuff. But, and then, of course, when everything is popping off, then you're like, oh man, I got to throw all my money into crypto. So I guess there's no good time. So eventually you'll have to pull the trigger. But,
yeah, hopefully it'll be more widely adopted, so it'll actually be like useful. Other than just,
I think it will be.
Than just, you know, being able to trade it. But
well, that's I'm hoping. And here's the other reason hardware wallets, I'm not sure about, right? Because like, okay, so like BlockFi or Binance or like literally any of these other companies, not ever like guaranteed that your stuff is secure. Like, you're just not. And it's not like you're saying these companies are bad or malicious, but like, you don't own your coins technically. Like, they're holding them for you. So if they get attacked, then your coins are getting taken. Or if there's a bad actor in the corporation, like, your coins are getting taken. So there's been several companies, and it's slipping my mind right now, but there have been several instances in the past 10 years where companies will sell you their, say, like, it's USDG, it's the USD Goose, okay? And now you're having people buy Goose coin, and then they can buy Ethereum, okay? Like, what happens if all the money they put in, you're keeping and investing, and their goose coin is worth, you know what I mean? And so now it's like you have this person just taking all of your money, and then when you go to cash out, there's not enough liquidity on the exchange for you to get your money back. So everyone's sitting there like, what did we do? And all your money's already gone, but you don't even know it. And so that's my problem with like BlockFi, for instance. Like, I use BlockFi because I trust it, but I think it's called Gemini USD is what you exchange for. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, I'm buying Gemini USD with my money, and then I'm going ahead and using that to buy Ethereum, but like, I'm giving them my money to buy this Ethereum. So do it. If somebody there is trying to abuse the system, like, who am I to say that they're not going to? And that's why buying a hardware wallet, like, no, like, you know for 100% fact that, like, your money is where it says it is. So that's where it kind of gets murky. Like, that's where that risk comes in. Like, I think even Binance got hacked, like, a few years ago. Like, a lot of things have gotten hacked. I mean, I don't want to put that out there and say for sure, but I know a lot of these platforms, like MetaMask, for instance, okay? There's this Google Chrome extension for MetaMask, I believe.
Right.
And I think it's one of those hacks where, I don't know what the different types of hacks are called, but you know when it's like someone sends you like a fake Twitter link and you log into it, but then you just submitted your password and stuff to them?
It's called phishing.
So phishing. So like there's different phishing scams for like MetaMask. Asking different stuff like that, and like it's just easier to get scammed in that way if you're using MetaMask or you're using some wallet online, whereas if you're using Ledger or some type of hardware wallet and somebody's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna need your public and private key, you'd be like, what? Like, no you don't. So it's kind of like you're more exposed to like phishing scams, whether it's your fault or not. But a lot of these people don't know much about crypto, and so they're gonna be susceptible, and I think that's the danger. So you have like those where it's specifically targeted at one person, like getting into their account and liquidating it, and then it's also the exchanges can get hacked themselves. So if there's just way more risk, whereas if you look at the hardware wallets, it's like there's just a lot less.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. But like you said, it's the opportunity cost where, unless you have a certain amount of, unless you have so much in crypto, yeah, it's not really worth it. So,
well, because, and the compound interest too.
Yeah. Generally, like software wallets are trustworthy.
Generally. Until they're not.
It's just hardware wallets are extreme, like exponentially more trustworthy.
So. It's kind of like this. It's like during the pandemic, you could have sat inside your house all the time and not gone anywhere and gotten your groceries delivered, or you could have gone out so that you didn't go insane. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, you know, some people.
If you go out, you might get the virus, but at least you're not pulling your hair out. But you could have stayed inside all day. So, I mean, like, that's kind of hardware wallet is like you could have sat inside all day, but, you know, maybe you're not making yield on your coins, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's all about risk.
Yeah, it's like if you want to be ultra safe, you can, but I would rather make 6% on my coins than have it sit and do completely nothing.
So, yeah, hopefully hardware wallets will be more useful in the future.
Which I think they definitely will be. Because Ethereum's moving to proof of stake, I think Chainlink should come up with some form of staking. Pretty sure Cardano already has it. Algorand already has it. So like all of those forms of staking are completely fine. But yeah, if it's like native staking, that's a lot better than staking it on like BlockFi, because they're actually loaning out your crypto.
Yeah. So, but that's also, if you use BlockFi, that's also how you get more APY, because there's more risk.
Exactly, yeah.
So, unless you had any other things to add about hardware wallets to the next topic?
I think that covers a lot of stuff about them.
Yeah, so our next topic was going to be Cardano and Ethereum, but we already talked about Ethereum. So Cardano is, as Benjamin Cohen likes to say, Cardano is the blockchain network, and the native token is ADA. So when we were talking about Cardano, we were talking about ADA as the coin, and it has been stable, relatively stable, around $1.20 for a long time. So what are your thoughts on Cardano?
I was saying, like, there, like, when Bitcoin came out, say, like, Bitcoin is MySpace, okay? And then Ethereum is, what came next? I'm not sure, like, Ethereum's Instagram or something. And then maybe Cardano's Facebook. So, like, MySpace is dead and gone. Instagram is great, but 12-year-olds use it. And then Facebook is what, like, everybody uses, okay? So, like, will it be like that? You know, there's several different car companies. Like, will it be like that where we're utilizing a bunch of different platforms? Or is it a situation where, like, Ethereum will come out number one and a bunch of dApps will be run off of Ethereum and that's all we need? Like, or, you know, it's really hard to tell, like, what's going to happen in the future. Like, I'm pretty confident that Bitcoin doesn't really have a place in like, crypto going forward. Like, Bitcoin, I think, will be a store of value like gold. But if I'm correct, I think oil is, like far exceeds gold in market cap. So oil isn't as sexy as, say, gold, but it's worth more. So as far as Cardano, like, I think Ethereum has first mover advantage, but a lot of people believe in Cardano, so, and they have a good team. So I think, depending on how things go, it could have a pretty big influence in the space.
For sure, yeah. I think we've mentioned the development team is like a bunch of MIT mathematicians and scientists and stuff like that, engineers. So it has a good, like, team behind it, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Charles Hoskinson worked on Ethereum when it was first conceived, I believe. So, I mean, who's to say, really? Like, I just don't think I'm smart enough or like, I can't really see into the future. So I don't know how this will all pan out, but it'll definitely be interesting going forward to see, like, what gets adopted and what becomes useful and what doesn't. Like, people talk about NFTs today, as far as, like, oh, you can buy this art or that art or whatever else, right? And to me, that's not the I don't think that's why they're valuable, right? Because, like, I think, aren't NFTs based off of, like, do you know the term for it when, like, you can prove, like, this is the only one? I mean, I guess it stands for non-fungible token, but basically, like, you have the proof on the blockchain saying, like, this thing that I own is the original, or it's verifiable that, like, so, like, if you had, like, a concert ticket that was on the blockchain as an NFT, that you couldn't get there and you'd be like, oh, this is a fake ticket, crap, I just wasted my money. Like, you could verify that is real, what you're buying. So, like, that's where I think it would be valuable, is, like, integrating it into systems like that. So if things like that pan out and that's how Ethereum is utilized, or say Cardano is better than Ethereum and that's how Cardano is utilized, like, we'll just have to see, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of, as with many things in crypto right now, it's a lot of speculation.
Yeah, 100%.
So,
but I do think here's what I think as well, though, and why I really like it is because, like, whenever I was younger and I heard my dad talking about, like he would say, whoa, when I was, you know, 20 and it was like Ford versus whatever company, or, you know, oh, if I would have invested in X company instead of Y company, then I would have had a lot of money today. yeah, like I feel like we're in this period right now where like that's what crypto is. Like,
right.
If you invest your money now when everybody's confused and doesn't know what anything is, you could be it could bode very well for you in the future. But the problem is, I think there will be a lot of people that look back and say, oh, I invested in Cardano because I thought it would kill Ethereum. I should have just invested in Ethereum. Or vice versa, I bought Ethereum because I thought that it would be the best forever, and Cardano was far better technology. I just didn't realize that at the time. And I think we're in that period where like some people will look back fondly and some people will really kick themselves. And some people will be like, man, when all of this was going crazy, where was I? You know what I mean? Oh, I was worried with this or that or that. And so I think that's why, like, I'm happy we're talking about this and why it's something that we both are interested in, because I do think that it'll be, like I told my friends, I do honor guard. So that's like, I meet a lot of new people. And like, when I talk about like crypto and stuff like that, I just tell them, like, they have questions and then they put me down and say, oh, this is dumb, that's dumb. And I'm like, look, man, like, you're going to look back in 20 years and you're going to be like, why didn't I just listen to this guy? And you're going to be like, oh, man. And so I don't know what it's going to be that is the most valuable like coin or project going forward. But I think it's definitely worth keeping an eye out so that you don't miss the boat.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So that's basically, you know, talked about Ethereum. We talked about a little bit about Cardano. You've mentioned Chainlink before. You're a big believer in Chainlink and how it brings it adds on to the Ethereum blockchain. It brings in data. It brings in data from the world, you know, whether it be like weather data or economic data or anything like that. And it adds the data to Ethereum, or I believe you could any blockchain. And it builds on blockchains and it makes them smarter.
And that's one I hope I'm not wrong about, because I don't see how, I will say, maybe it's not Chainlink that prevails, but there, I do believe there has to be some, if Ethereum is to be the number one, say like cryptocurrency or number one smart contract type cryptocurrency, I guess network, like if that's what it is to be, something like Chainlink, I believe, will have to exist.
So if Cardano is, you know, kind of a competitor to Ethereum, are there any other competitors to Chainlink right now that you know of?
I believe there's one called, gosh, what is it called? There is one. There for sure is one. And I'm going to look for it right now, actually. But I will say, as far as competitors,
like, so I'm looking at OARO
is one of them, but then there's Band Protocol is one of them.
Band Protocol.
Band is one that I've actually seen before. That's what I was looking for. But so yeah, there are competitors, but like you'll see, like if you research online, like none of them are as it. Like, so when I talk about Ethereum has the first mover advantage, and that's why I'm not sure if Cardano will be able to catch up. Chainlink, I believe, has the first mover advantage as far as like how many platforms it has integrated with. Like, if you go on the Chainlink subreddit, it's really boring. Like, it's really super boring because all it is just them talking about all of the integrations that have happened recently. Like every day it's like a new integration and there's like likes on it, but there's no comments, and it's like, it's boring because nobody's talking about the price and nobody's talking like hype at all. But you're like, damn, like they've added three or four new projects, you know, that I've seen since I checked it, and like it's boring, but it makes me think like nobody's paying attention to this. And then once it takes off, people will pay attention and it'll be too late. So like, that's where I'm at with it. It's kind of a gamble, I guess, but I just, to me, like, what, especially with like Benjamin Cohen and the things I've seen, is like, don't really pay attention to like the price volatility. Like Dogecoin, for instance, there's no substance to back up its price volatility. but it just happens. So like Chainlink and Ethereum and all that, sometimes you won't see insane volatility that makes you really perk up your ears. But like, if you just pay attention to the fundamentals, right, like that'll make sure the project is strong when Bitcoin starts taking off and coins start following, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's what how I feel about it. And but like, yeah, so Chainlink, when we were talking about its competitors, like there is an argument against Chainlink that basically, and I don't know if this makes sense to you, but Chainlink doesn't necessarily need a token because the nodes could collateralize with Ether, which to me makes sense. Like, why, like, Chainlink shouldn't need a token if you can collateralize with the token from the native blockchain. But then it makes me think, if it's blockchain agnostic, then it would be much easier to just hold Chainlink.
Have its own coin.
Yes. And then, because if you're working on a bunch of different blockchains and integrating information into a bunch of different places, like, why would you want to have to muddy up the waters and hold a bunch of different coins when you could just hold Chainlink? So there's arguments either way, but you know, it's interesting. That's what makes it fun, I think, is you're not just looking at a project. Like, you could invest money in Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever top 10 coin and just let it sit and you would make money. But like I've said in the past, like, look at different projects and think like, what will be valuable? And to me, like, Chainlink's market cap is so low right now that if you put money in it, that market cap is like, I think $500 billion market cap easy, but that's going to take Ethereum hitting $1 trillion market cap, a $1.5 trillion market cap. And that's insane, right? But like, that means that if you put your money in when it was at 4,000, you would have only 2x your money. But if, like, you know, if Ethereum starts moving Chainlink's market cap along with it, like, you'll easily 10x, 20x. Like, so that's why I try to look for a little bit smaller projects, but nothing like in the $1 million market cap range, or you know, that's really risky. So
yeah. So we actually have to move on to one last topic because we're almost out of time, surprisingly. There's a couple other topics that we wanted to talk about, but I think the last one we're going to focus on is the quote unquote shit coins. I believe you wanted to talk about a little bit of that. So go ahead and give your spiel on shit coins.
So I'll ask you, like, which ones are you familiar with? Like,
I know Dogecoin. That's the quote unquote meme coin.
So, okay, now I know a lot of people hate Dogecoin, or not hate it, but have kind of like a hands-off approach. But like, in my opinion, I don't think Dogecoin is a shit coin. Like, okay, like, it is by definition, like, it's a meme coin. But the difference is, like, Dogecoin has been around for far longer than a lot of projects that try to claim that they're like shit coins or meme coins. It has like a much higher market cap to back up, you know, what it is, and a far bigger user base. I mean, I think its subreddit alone has like over 1 million people on it. Okay. And like, so the coins I'm referencing as shit coins, there's like SafeMoon is one that just came out. There's a coin called Dink Doink that like Logan Paul and all his people, like, so there was a coin called Save the Kids that was a gigantic scam. Okay. Like, and it's basically like, they will pay influencers in these coins to advertise it to their fans, and then they'll all just rug pull their fans when they start throwing money in, right? So,
that's horrible.
Those are the types of coins I'm talking about, and that's what people see because their favorite influencers are advertising them. And so that's where I wanted to talk about, like it's interesting to me, the juxtaposition between, like, you have legitimate projects like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Cardano, and then, like, before it was like, haha, Dogecoin is dumb, and like, it is. But then you start looking at these other coins that come out, and they have they're the ones that have like the burn. So like, you, every time you make a transaction, like, it burns 50% of it, and then it redistributes 50% to other holders. And like, those are good ideas, but now every single coin that comes out that's some random shit coin is like, it's doing that. And then it gets all these people to put their money in, and then somebody rug pulls it, or it dumps, and everybody's like, oh, why did it dump? And so those have now come out, and they keep coming out, because it's really easy to make your own token. And then you have coins like Dogecoin that used to be like the really, really the stupidest token out on the market. But now, comparatively, Dogecoin is somewhat legitimate because, like, in my opinion, if you take a look at, like, Bitcoin, okay, and then you take a look at Dogecoin, like, what's the difference? Like, you could say Bitcoin has a maximum supply of 21 million, so therefore it's just scarcity is built in. Dogecoin has a supply that is ever increasing. However, the rate at which people trade it and buy it outweighs the inflation from that. So it's scarce, but not as scarce as Bitcoin. But like, then what is the utility, right? Like Dogecoin, you can pay for things. I believe a company paid SpaceX in Dogecoin to send something to like the moon or into orbit or whatever. Bitcoin, you can use to pay for things. You know, like what's the difference? Like there's not a huge difference between Bitcoin and say Dogecoin, but people want to be Bitcoin maximalists and say Bitcoin is the shit. And that's all I believe in. But then it's like, look at Dogecoin. Like, Bitcoin isn't used for anything. Dogecoin right. isn't used for anything. But when you look at Ethereum is used for a whole hell of a lot. And so that's when I started thinking about it along those lines, like, what is a shitcoin? And it's just like, I could put the face of Dogecoin onto Bitcoin and flip Bitcoin onto Dogecoin. And I think that people would be none the wiser. Like, people would be like, oh no, screw Dogecoin. It only has a maximum supply of 21 million. That's not practical. You know, look at Bitcoin over here with its increasing supply so that you can trade it without heavily inflated prices, right? Like, but people just get into this mindset, like, Bitcoin is here first, so I have to, you know, be all over Bitcoin, and Dogecoin's a stupid dog, and I'm not stupid, so it's just like people get into this mindset, and it's like, but when you take a step back, like it's just like, I feel like Dogecoin's on the same level as Bitcoin and any other coin that doesn't really have utility, but was around first, like Litecoin, for instance. Litecoin has some, what is that called? What Litecoin does, where like you can't tell which coin is which. Like Bitcoin, you can always tell which Bitcoin is traded, and like if it was ever involved with like the Silk Road. But like there's this feature on Litecoin that like you can't differentiate token to token. I forget what it's called, but
I do not know.
See, I need to look that up now. But basically, Litecoin has features that they're implementing, which is cool. But like, it's the same thing where Litecoin has like an 84 million supply, and you know, what does it do? Like, you can transact it, but it's like you can transact Ethereum or Ether. You can enter, so you can transact USDC on the Ethereum blockchain. And so that's where, like, to me, the smarter route is, hey guys, look, we have Ethereum, and now you can go ahead and you can transact USDC, which reflects the dollar. You can do this, you can do that. There's no reason to transact Bitcoin. That's really slow, and it's in Satoshis, or it's in, you know, it's 0.000 whatever, because nobody can afford one Bitcoin. So like, Ethereum is what looks like the smartest outcome to me. And so that's why I wanted to talk about shitcoins, because like, now that we're looking at all these terrible scams and rug pulls, it's like, okay, that's our baseline for what's horrible and not great. But then look at what it used to be. It used to be Dogecoin was the stupidest thing around. And now, if we're going to put Dogecoin in that category, like, to me, that's what Bitcoin looks like. And like what Litecoin looks like. Like the old ones, the old coins that came out that are the dinosaurs that aren't up to par with Cardano or Ethereum or Chainlink or Algorand or whatever. And so like, I think things are moving away from the what there used to be 10 years ago. And now we're coming into an age where things are being more refined and have dev teams that are still active and whatnot. And so, yeah. So, yeah, I just wanted to draw that comparison between like Dogecoin, which is a shitcoin, but then all these other things that are just insanely toxic in the crypto space.
For sure, yeah. Definitely have to be on the lookout for those.
Yeah. And people, but the draw is like, whoa, this has gained 80,000% in a week. That's like, yeah, but now it's at the peak. So there's only down to go from here.
All right. And well,
the Litecoin thing was called Mimblewimble.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to look. So.
All right. Well, I think that'll have to wrap it up for today because we're out of time. So thank you for listening. We'll be back eventually with another episode. It'll be a new topic. We'll discuss about that. And in the meantime, follow my main channel. It's Titanium Tetrahedron. Follow that on Twitter as well. And then you can follow Alec too if you want. I believe he's on Twitter.
And I should be following Noah, so find me in there.
So yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll be back. Who knows when, but we will be back. That's for sure. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to look out for part 2 of this episode next week. If you enjoyed this content, be sure to follow us on YouTube, Anchor, Spotify, or wherever you're listening.